And welcome back to the first My Bloody Horrorcast episode of 2018.
Yeah, we've been doing it for a whole year.
We have made it through stuff, through, you know, wild times in our own personal lives and all the amazing movies that we had to struggle just to find the time to see.
I know.
To provide this broadcast for our fans and friends and family. So,
This is our 12th episode.
It's our 12th episode, too. So that's, you know, it's
Carrie,
a dozen.
We've done it.
We're dozen in. I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty proud of us. And, I think we deserve to pat ourselves on the back for just a brief moment.
Pat.
So 2017, horror. There was a lot to talk about.
Yeah, Carrie and I were just talking about how we kind of have the same feeling where 2016 had such a variety of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And 2017 was also a great year for horror movies. There were a lot of movies we both saw and loved. But it really felt like this past year there were a few major standouts.
Yes.
Rather than like a bunch that we loved for different reasons.
Totally agreed. And I think that horror is a genre that I think has exploded, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years. Horror has always been known as a great genre for directors to get their start in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horror films are very inexpensive to produce, so they tend to bring really, you know, high grosses into theaters, respective to their budget. But also, I think horror is expanding out of what it once was. Horror is becoming a platform for... It used to be white males directed horror films.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, you know, a scream queen, you know, a white female scream queen, and that was pretty much it. Now we're seeing female directors are entering the horror field and making a big splash.
Mm-hmm.
We see directors of other races and ethnicities really coming into it. So I think that horror is actually as timely as it's ever been.
Oh, I totally agree. Especially with my number one movie of the year in all sorts of our Oscar horror categories.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's incredibly timely.
Yes.
But even movies that kind of call back to, like, really classic things, like a monster movie, for instance. There was one this year. There were a couple this year. And I just thought they were so progressive. And
mm-hmm.
they were so interesting. Mm-hmm. And they were so fresh in what they were doing. So, yeah, it's a good time to be watching horror.
It is.
There's a lot out there. But this particular year, for me anyway, there was one movie that was pretty much the best movie in terms of horror. And there were a couple others that I thought were pretty near perfect.
Without having to talk, I know what your best is. And you probably know what my best is. It is one of those years where that just is how it is. You can't really frame it in any other way that makes any rational sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of our audience probably knows where we're going, but you know, that's kind of the fun of it. There are a lot of twists and turns along the way. So
less twists and turns this year, but
yeah. but one thing I do want to say that can't be discounted is that streaming services really brought their A game this year with horror.
Yeah.
I can think of three in particular that I'll mention a little bit that Netflix brought out that were three of the best horror films I watched this year. So even though those films won't get the recognition that they probably deserve in terms of they're not going to be on the Oscar ballots because they were, you know, direct to stream, they didn't have theatrical releases, thankfully, the My Bloody Horrorcast 2017 horror film Oscars are there to help them.
Yeah,
so,
horror Oscar,
you know,
time.
It's really good that we're here for that reason. There also were a lot of film stuff this year. A lot of films that straddled the line between being a true horror film and being a thriller, a suspense film, a drama.
An action.
There are a couple films I'm even going to mention. One of my honorable just mentions in general this year really isn't a horror film, yet it has the pace, the score, the feel of a horror film the entire time, and I'll discuss that in a little bit too.
I have a lot of movies like that.
And I know, in fact, one of the last ones I finally saw before we did this podcast, it was last night, I finally saw the last film that I really wanted to see this year, a horror film, and it's one of my top five for the year. It is also debatable whether it's a true horror film. So, very excited to talk about that. So yeah, so you know, we're going to kind of do what we did last year. We're going to start with a few different categories leading up to our best film of the year. And we're going to have an honorable mention, as we did last year, for each of our categories as well.
Yeah, if mine didn't have a runner-up, it would be literally like three movies.
Right. Now, this is a category. So for anyone who doesn't know Steph, Steph is a design whiz. She is one of the most design savvy people I know, just in terms of her, both the aesthetics of her outfit, her designs, painting. She's a writer. She's an artist. So the design hair makeup category, I feel like, is a category that she'll probably be the most valid opinion on, but have one as well.
I'm blushing. Do we want to start off with that one?
Well, what do you think? Should we do, what do you want to start off with?
Yeah, let's get that one out of the way and then go on to visual effects.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right, so my choice for design, makeup, hair, it's one of those ones we were talking about. Maybe it's not a horror movie, but I think it has a lot of horror trappings.
And real quick, we're doing design, hair, makeup again, as in last year, is in one category, and we're picking one from that general basket, right?
Okay. Yes, and cool. I chose The Shape of Water. Luis Sequeira, who I think has worked with Guillermo del Toro on some other projects in the past. Mm-hmm. Basically, The Shape of Water is this dark fairy tale. It's set in the 1960s, which is aesthetically my favorite decade in America. But it's also it also has a lot of more 50s in it and a lot of muted color palettes because it's the Cold War. But it's beautiful. And then there's this musical number in there that's a throwback to like a Ginger Rogers style movie. That is straight up magical. I just think this movie is so much about the look of it, and and I loved it.
So, this is the one tragedy of this year. My one tragedy of 2017 is that I have not yet seen Shape of Water.
Oh, you're killing me, Carrie.
I know. But I know enough about Guillermo del Toro. I've been a fan since Devil's Backbone. I know Cronos is his first film, but I've been a fan since way back. I can already tell that I probably would agree with you on that. For me, the one I picked, is kind of an interesting choice, but the reason for it is the actual structure in which it takes place. So it's Mother. It's Larry Diaz and Martin Guerrier Kazarichuk. I totally butchered that name completely. But the house in Mother is just this phenomenal. It's its own character. The house is its own character.
Oh, absolutely.
And the set design is phenomenal. It really sets the tone for everything that happens in the film. So I'm going with best set design for Mother, because I think it just blew me away. And the more I think about that film, the more I think about the paint on the walls, the designs of the walls, and how things shift and change throughout the film. It's pretty gorgeous.
Well, the way that house works as a symbol or a metaphor, I mean,
absolutely.
I think so much is riding on its design. And
it is.
It's perfect.
Yep.
My runner-up for design, makeup, hair was 1922. That's one of the Netflix horror movies that Carrie and I both liked. And that was by Claudia DuPont. I read an interview where she only had 24 hours to get those costumes together, or to source them, to source materials and stuff. And it's wholly transportive to this worn-in farm life. And just spoilers, the wife is in this decaying murder dress, like blood dress. I suspect she put in an incredible amount of work and resourcefulness to achieve this, but it looks effortless. Like, you just feel totally like you're in this movie, you're on this, like, kind of homestead.
Yes.
It just has this effortless, natural look, and I was very impressed.
First off, I think it's a fantastic film. It's one of my favorites of the year. And you are completely immersed in this setting, this early 20s. I'll go with that as my runner-up too, honestly. I've been sort of on the fence between two, but I really agree with you on that one. I think it's, again, another example where the setting is a character. And the best settings are their own characters in the film. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with that.
Do you want to kick off visual effects?
Yeah, absolutely. So, best visual effects, I'm going to go with a film that I know for a lot of us, you know, there's some divergent opinions on this film, but Farron Dominack is the special effects coordinator for Alien Covenant.
Oh my god, I fucking knew you might choose Alien Covenant.
I had to throw it into one category, and I had to torture you with at least putting it in one horror Oscars category. He and Charlie Henley, who is the visual effects designer for the film, work really well together. I think the effects are just phenomenal. I don't know if they will ever substitute for, you know, the original alien head, snapping at Sigourney Weaver in 1986's Aliens, but these are phenomenal. Really, just the overall set design, the ship, the creatures, everything is stellar. You can say what you want about the film, and again, we had a lot of different opinions on that, but you really can't argue that the effects are just unbelievable. One of my favorite parts, though, is actually when you go into the lair of Fassbender's character in the film and the set design when they get onto the planet. I thought was actually one of my favorite scenes. Some of my favorite scenes and some of my favorite sets. So, but overall, just the visual effects in general, just phenomenal, and that's my pick.
You know what? I'm not even going to hate on you right now, Carrie, because I have similar reasons for my runner-up.
Yeah.
And we're both people who love space horror, but recognize that it's sort of difficult to do. So even though I did not like pretty much a thing about Alien Covenant, I appreciate a lot of the effects work that went into it. It looks good.
It's a hallmark of Ridley Scott films. You're not going to see a Ridley Scott film that doesn't have ace special effects. That's one thing. Sometimes it won't have the heart that you want. Sometimes it's very much... He's kind of Kubrickian sometimes in his way of, you know, everything's kind of held at bay, but the effects are there. And actually, in this film, it's a little more fun even than Prometheus. You and I both did not like Prometheus.
We didn't care for Prometheus.
This one at least has some comic relief. I think you've got Danny in there adding some comic relief in, which I think makes a difference. But anyway, I'm digressing. You're either in the it's a fun ripoff of Alien Camp, yay, or it's a fun ripoff of Alien Camp, boo. Yeah. It's kind of what I think a lot of us were.
That's pretty much how Carrie and I split on that. But
what's
anyway,
yours?
Sorry, but again, it's The Shape of Water, that Amazonian fish man. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Just the believability and investment that we're able to put in this. I mean, a lot of it's Doug Jones, who's like acted as a creature in plenty of Guillermo del Toro's movies.
Yes.
But the design and realization of this creature is jaw-dropping.
Fine character actor.
And it's not a character that's like hidden in the shadows or the waters all the time. Like, it has a lot of screen time, and I was just totally invested. The eye blinks, the shimmery scales, I just think it was beautiful. It's so good. I loved it. And just really quick, my runner-up was Life. Life is definitely an Alien ripoff.
Yes, it is.
But I enjoyed it, especially the first half. Can you say the same?
I mean, I was disappointed because I think I felt it was going to go in a different direction than it actually went in, and it becomes ploddingly slow in the second half.
Oh, yeah.
The second act up until the third act, it really... I mean, normally that's the tone of films. I mean, you have a... You know, now you have a a protracted first act, a really extended second act, and then you have, and then, you know, the finale, the climax. But despite that, it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
looks beautiful.
There's this one scene where Calvin the alien crushes the bones of that scientist's hand, and when the scientist like manages to free himself, the alien pushes the glove inside out to like wave at that like crushed hand. That killed me. I loved it.
It was a frightening scene. You know what? I like this one a lot. I like that pick a lot. It's a space horror year for visual effects. We'll just say that.
Yeah, exactly.
Alien Covenant and Life are both top-notch visuals. Yeah, and I wish that Life had been the sort of blast for me that Alien Covenant was, instead of so brooding and everything was so serious and
God. By the time like Jake Gyllenhaal is reading us the entirety of Goodnight Moon, I'm like, damn, this movie.
Yeah, I know, right.
But it wins for me, at least in the looks department. So.
Oh yeah. No, I agree. So, all right, should we go best score next?
Yeah.
What do you think? Okay. Actually, do you mind starting?
Oh, I don't. So, I did not dislike the movie It, and I saw it with a crowd that I've rarely experienced at horror screenings, which was extremely fun, but I didn't love it that much. I did, however, love Benjamin Wallfisch's score. He also did the score for Annabelle Creation, and it's rare that I would choose, or that I'd even be interested in, a horror soundtrack that isn't electronic or kind of John Carpenter sounding.
Mm-hmm.
But the soundtrack to It is one of my favorite things about the movie. It has this rich layered piano, there are a bunch of scary strings, and there's just the right amount of like a creepy kids choir. I think it's good, and I was listening to it yesterday. It still sounds good without the movie, too, so.
It's a really good score. It's a really good score. There's some mint humor for you. Wow. I agree. I think the score on that's great. My pick for score is maybe kind of a strange one. There's not much of a score to be had in this film. It's much more of sort of a sound. It's just a string of sounds. It's not so Black Hood's Daughter.
Ooh, interesting.
It's more sound design and technique as opposed to a physical score. Because, for example, Kiernan Shipka in that early scene plays that song on the piano piece. Mm-hmm. And it fits in really well with the score. There's little moments like that in Black Hood's Daughter that were really, really good. But overall, I think what's so frightening about that film is based on the score. I think it continues to ratchet up the suspense as the film gets more and more suspenseful and sort of builds and builds, and the score does a great job with that.
It's definitely like a moody, atmospheric film. Mm-hmm. So you need like kind of a creepy, intense building.
Yes. It's Elvis Perkins is the soundtrack composer.
Oh, All in the Family.
Exactly. Exactly. So you've got Osgood as the director and Elvis as the composer. So I thought that was kind of cool too.
Unfortunately, I do not have a runner-up, but it's mostly on me that I didn't get a chance to watch a couple movies I'd planned on. The Lure never played in Athens, Georgia.
I'm going to have a few to talk about later that we didn't get a chance to see here.
So I hear that the music in The Lure is great, and the music in Prevenge, but I didn't watch that either. That's like a cool-sounding electronic score, I guess. I haven't heard it, and I haven't watched the movie, but...
Well, I mean, like... You know, Super Dark Times had a really good, throwback 80s synthesizer score. That was a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
It played a lot on that sort of Stranger Things kind of synth score. So there is a lot, you know, I feel like maybe there's either intentional or unintentional sort of people are kind of riffing off the Stranger Things.
It didn't feel as heavy-handed as like a Stranger Things soundtrack.
It wasn't.
And then it has like these 90s songs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's, man, a, it's so more
atmospheric
movies.
Than full score, yeah. And some
yeah, there's so many movies that I loved, but I wouldn't really put in any of our horror Oscar categories.
I know, it's been a tough year for those movies. Yeah, you know, you spoke on something actually I will talk about really quick. There are probably four or five horror films that I was dying to see that I simply couldn't find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even streaming services that never screened around here. Tragedy Girls, Dead Shack. Veronica by Paco Plaza, who directed Wreck, Wreck and Wreck 2, which Wreck 2 is a great sequel, but Wreck is one of the best all-time found footage films. And his new one, Veronica, Demonic Possession, again, you know.
I'm sorry I didn't get to see Tragedy Girls.
Yeah, those. So, I mean,
didn't get to see The Belko Experiment. At least Carrie saw that one.
I did see that. Well, I'll talk about that a little bit, but it didn't win a horror Oscar, but I can you know, run over it. Because we had two office horror films, Mayhem and Belko Experiment. I got to see both of those. But yeah, so Double Date was another one. And there was even, supposedly, one of the more disturbing films of the year, The Sleep Curse, from the King of Gore, Herman Yao, who did a bunch of the, the A13 stuff back in... the early 2000s, late 90s, like some of the torture porn
I'd have to know
stuff.
Some titles. That doesn't ring a
it's like
right
stuff
away.
Like Guinea Pig, I think. It's sort of that kind of stuff.
Okay, like that. Ooh, well.
And I don't know if it's a film I really want to see either, because that's just not my thing.
Yeah.
But Pool Party Massacre was supposedly a great 80s throwback. So here's a host of films that we didn't get to see this year that, you know, I hope we get to talk about maybe later in the year, even though they're, maybe we can have a Films We Missed episode, you know, or if we get a chance to watch those. So, anyway, back to...
Well, that's all I had for music score. Did you have a runner-up or honorable mention?
I mean, I would say I thought the Super Dark Times score was great. Mm-hmm. I really thought The Babysitter was fun, a fun throwback score.
That's right.
That's a lot of fun. You just that entire movie is just one big bundle of fun. There's not really much of an original moment in it, and that's okay because they do it so well.
Mm-hmm.
And with such aplomb, MCG, McG.
McG!
Yeah. So, okay, so now we're, I think we're about to start our performer categories here. We've got design, hair, makeup, score, visual effects out of the way. So, what do you think? Should we start with...
Best supporting?
Best supporting or best director? What do you think? Or should we save director?
Oh, director for last.
Yeah, all right. Okay, cool. Let's do best supporting then. All right.
Okay. Well, I had Barry Keoghan, who's Martin in Killing of a Sacred Deer. Another movie, you might not call it a horror movie, though I will say it has two horrific moments that I covered my eyes at. And I think one of the brilliant things about the movie is I like laugh cried during multiple parts of this movie when I saw it in theaters at Cine here in Athens. But I also like covered my eyes at one part close to the end that reminded me of a scene in the movie Raw, which I also loved.
What's up with the arm scenes this
year? Oh,
yeah.
Taking a bite. But Barry Keoghan, he has a really unique look. I don't want to be cruel about it, but there's something that he's really able to look evil and a little insolent really well.
He doesn't have the classic, and I mean this actually not, this isn't meant as to his detriment, but he does not have the classic Hollywood, the chiseled jaw of a Hollywood star.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I think that my favorite performers don't have that normally. You know, they are the character actors of cinema, so.
Yeah, but he's given the speech with spaghetti, and then this other
spaghetti
scene
is so good.
It's amazing. And when he's explaining this kind of mystical
just
revenge
twisting
rules.
Yes, yes. Twisting the fork. Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
I was blown away by his performance.
I love the absurdity of that scene, too. It plays on so many levels so well.
Yeah. And, like, Yorgos Lanthimos, the way he directs, he presents characters who don't, like, emote the way human beings do. But I think Barry Keoghan is the perfect actor to, like, read those lines. I loved it.
People in Lanthimos' films often communicate without any precursor to what they're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like you're getting a raw feed from a human being without anything to go with it. It's giving you just the facts. It's very interesting how his characters speak.
Yeah, not a lot of passion in there.
No.
But a lot of extreme things being said.
Well, all his characters too, I think one of the things he plays on is that every character in this film is boiling inside,
mm-hmm.
but it never really comes out for the most part. It nearly comes to the surface in a few cases, or I guess comes a little bit over, but all these characters, you know, they're yearning to speak, and they're not doing that. So yeah, it's interesting. I had Ella Rumpf from Raw.
This older sister, I loved her too.
So she's Alexia. She's the older sister of Justine, the main character, Grance Millière. Maridia, it's terrible French. So she's like this whirlwind character. You know, she's living the wild life of the vet school elite at the school in France that her younger sister has now been accepted to. She's in all the secret society. She's in the fraternity, or I guess the sorority fraternity slash thing organization. And now she has to caretake her younger sister.
Like a tough, cool party girl.
She's a tough, cool party girl, man. She's the person probably everyone wanted to party with in college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you totally, like, she just has that energy around her. She knows a lot of secrets that her younger sister does not know, and that starts to become very painfully and violently apparent as the film goes on. And it's a beautiful film in a lot of ways about family and secrets, and there are a lot of family secrets films this year, Killing the Sacred Deer as well. She isn't the golden child that her younger sister is, and she wears kind of the weariness of being the older one who doesn't quite get the same attention as the younger one does.
Mm-hmm.
She wears that very well. She knows too much about what's going on in some of these secrets that we don't know, and she's really fearing that her sister is on heading on a path towards that. And I don't want to say too much, of course, about the film right now.
Do you think she was fearful about her sister?
I think there was a mix of emotions. I think fear was one. I think excitement was the other.
Yeah, I think she was a straight-up psychopath, but a very charming one.
I think there was fear in there. I think that's the mark of her performance. She's a broken character, and that's part of just, you know, that brokenness comes from fear, whatever that fear is, or wherever mm-hmm. that fear is directed. So yeah, that was my top supporting performer.
Oh, that would have been a good one. You know, I feel bad that I didn't even consider her because she was also one of my favorite performances of the year. There were a lot of great actresses performing.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked Michelle Pfeiffer as my honorable mention as one of the many unwanted guests in Mother.
She's great.
There's a lot to talk about with Mother, and I know it wasn't everyone's particular poison. It was mine. I loved it. But of all the unwanted guests that enter the story, Michelle Pfeiffer's character is, like, my favorite. She's nosing into, like, J-Law's business. She's throwing these, like, evil side eyes. And she's got, like, off-the-chain sex appeal.
Oh, she throws shade like no other character did this year. I mean...
She killed me!
Yeah, no, she was great. And, you know, very little screen time. It's one of those classic role supporting performer roles. Very little screen time, and every single second that screen time is just, you're riveted.
Michelle Pfeiffer, please be cast in more things.
Oh my God, yes.
A delight, an evil, terrifying, obnoxious delight. And I loved Mother. I mean, that would be like a second tier honorable mention for so many of these categories for me.
Oh yeah, no, agreed. So, you know, this next category, we may have a disagreement, I guess, over what this next, where you would put this performer. Because, in my opinion, the movie Creep 2, there is only one lead. There's only one lead character. Mark Duplass is the lead. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to put anyone else as the lead in that film. So, and again, you may disagree with me. That doesn't mitigate the presence of Desiree Akhavan in Creep 2 at all.
I totally consider her a lead. She has almost equal screen time.
I know. I'm not really sure where this one's going, But I thought she was one of my favorite performers of the year, regardless. Mm-hmm. Regardless of where I'm putting her, she's one of my favorites. And part of that also is that I have two other best actresses. She could not be in that category of the other two actresses. They have to be my number one, my honorable mention. So I'm putting her, I'm giving her the deserved time that she needs right here, because she can't be one of my top two picks.
She is great. Creep 2... and her character in it were such a breath of fresh air. She's a final girl like no other.
Yep. So Sarah is her name. Her decisions are head-scratching at times. you really wonder why she isn't leaving. You know, So Creep 2 becomes sort of like a twisted version of like Sunset Boulevard, right? You've got someone who wants this person to come in and film a documentary, but really there's a much more sinister aspect to what they want.
Mm-hmm.
This character, Sarah, who...
the Sunset Boulevard of found footage.
That's
films.
Right. You know, she's a blogger. She's very big. She has her own website, a TV show, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah,
online
she's
show.
A YouTube girl.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so her character both shows sort of the desperation of modern journalism to do whatever it takes to get the shot on one side. She's willing to basically, you know, dance with the psychopath. You know, metaphorically, and because she really wants to know what's going on. I it's kind of an interesting counterpiece to like something you might see like Dan Gilroy's Nightcrawler, that was really grimy and very adrenaline, adrenaline laced. Here, you've got through the lens of this woman who's fascinated by this personality, this powerful, strong, dangerous personality. And she is true to herself. She's going to get the shot. She's going to get what she needs for her article. She's going to find the truth behind it.
There are a couple things that go on with that character. Like, she doesn't fully register the complete danger she's in.
No.
But at the same time, she really keeps her cool when she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she's brave, and she's not easily scared.
She's not. At the same time, I think there is an instinct that probably anyone would have, female or male, in this position to almost be, to admire and almost swoon in the face of a personality that is this powerful, this dangerous, this sort of, you know, you don't know where this person's going. So
this bizarrely unique.
Yeah. uncentered, yeah. So I thought that she held her own really well against Aaron Duplass's character. And... I thought the sequel was almost better than the first, because I think that while Patrick Bryce is great in his role and he's great as a writer or a co-writer and director, her performance was what was needed to give Duplass, to someone to counter Duplass. I think we needed mm-hmm. a strong performance from someone like her. So.
Oh, absolutely. As an actor and as a character, she's...
Yep.
She's that actor and character's equal.
And she's you know, she's done a number of things. She's acted and directed in some shorts as well. She's been around. So even though she might be a new face for a lot of people, she's definitely an up-and-coming personality. So.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see the movie she starred and directed in.
Yep.
Will? Should we go on to Best Actor?
Should we do Best Actor? Yeah, let's do Best Actor.
Well, just because I want to run right into it, I want to say that my honorable mention for Best Actor is Mark Duplass as the creep, going by Aaron in Creep 2.
Same too. Same here.
Well, first, I love Mark Duplass, and I'll be damned if that character didn't trick me twice, Carrie. I'm just like, I would have gone to the lake and gotten the axe in the first Creep movie, and in the second one, I think I would have fully been invested and treated his midlife crisis like a normal person's midlife crisis, and been like, there's a sweetness and vulnerability there, maybe, but he still wants to kill people.
That's the thing. I kind of think of him as a wolf stalking his prey. I mean, obviously, he has the wolf mask, but yeah. He really is. They're in the forest, he's stalking the prey, and he goes from this, he does have this innocence, this sort of brokenness to him, but he can go from, in, you know, 3.5 seconds from that to psychopathic. I mean, right, you never know where that line is going. It's always, the psychopathic nature is always there, but this sort of innocence kind of bubbles up a couple times. It's really fascinating.
But anything he feels, it's not ever for anyone but himself. He's always a psychopath.
Sure.
Yeah.
Even when he seems like this achingly honest, you know, kind of broken soul, but it's really just a flash.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flash of humanity, as opposed to the flash of, you know, of psychopath that someone might have, a normal human being might have.
And plenty of actors can be charming psychopaths on screen, but I think Mark Duplass is charming and weird and just kind of perfect for this type of movie. I hope Creep movies go on forever, and I hope Mark Duplass always has a part in them.
I was shocked it was as good as it was. Not that I didn't think it was going to be good, but horror sequels traditionally are never as good as the first one. I think it's rare we find a horror sequel that's as good as the first. This one breaks the mold. This one might be as good as the first Creep. It might be better.
I think so, too.
Mumble horror. Maybe we need more mumble horror. It's the best found footage film since The Visit as well. So I think that's something.
Yeah, well. Big fan of the Creep movies and mm-hmm. Mark Duplass. All right, and just my best actor was Daniel Kaluuya as Chris in Get Out. I think Get Out is the best movie of the year. I think everything about it blew every other movie out of the water, horror or otherwise. It's my favorite movie of 2017 in any genre. I previously only seen Daniel Kaluuya in an episode of Black Mirror.
That was such a disturbing episode, too.
He was great in it, but I'm not familiar with any of his other work. Mm-hmm. And when I saw Get Out, he spends a lot of the movie like trying to play it cool and to try to be logical in the face of like everything that's going on. But his discomfort and his fear and just his wide-eyed shock and like the tears coming out of his eyes, like it was such a powerful performance. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel for his position trapped in this white crazy world.
it's a phenomenal film, and he is great in it. But I don't see how you can't give the award to James McAvoy for Split.
Oh, Split was really good.
Terrifying, shocking, problematic. His performance, no matter how you feel again about the problematic nature of sensationalizing multiple personality disorder, his commitment to the performance is unequaled. There's no performer this year that equaled what he was able to do with nine different people, acting as nine different characters.
It's definitely my favorite James McAvoy role.
It's not my favorite film. In fact, it doesn't even crack my top mm-hmm. five or even top 10 for horror films this year. Even though it is a well-done film, it looks great. There's a lot missing for it, from it for me. But whether he's Hedwig, who was his favorite role to play, the nine-year-old, he was a 9-year-old, but wasn't it 22 personalities, isn't that right? I think it was 22. But he was the 9-year-old, right?
Waiting for the beast.
Yes. He said Patricia was the hardest. He was like, I'm not trying to be reductive here, but I've never worn high heels and it is agonizing. Yes. He said his calves just weren't ready for it. No, but he, again, his dedication, the way he vacillates between characters, I've just never seen anything like it. I've really never seen a performance of someone able to do that so fluidly.
It was a very impressive performance.
So I could not give it to him. Yeah, I mean that's really, he's the best part of the movie. He drives the movie completely from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there had been some other aspects of the film besides just his performance, but again, it's one of the best performances I saw this year. So, yeah.
That was a really amazing performance.
I don't think that can be that will be equaled. Okay, so there is our best actor category. I do like how we each picked our same honorable mention in the duplicates. Okay, so best actress.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, so my honorable mention, Nicole Kidman in Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Mm.
She is just brilliant. I'll just give you some little career retrospective real briefly of Nicole Kidman. 34 years into her career. I think she gives one of her best performances. She has 4 Oscar nominations, 1 win. 12 Golden Globe nominations, 4 wins. That, I mean, we forget, I think early on her celebrity, her connection to Tom Cruise actually hurt her being viewed as a performer in her own right,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a celebrity. Because when you're married to Tom Cruise, you're back in the days, you're in the tabloid all the time, you know. But I think when you look back on her career, she is one of the great actresses of the last 34 years. I really do think that, especially when you look at a few pivotal roles. So when she gets darker, then it's good. Like To Die For, one of her best roles.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Absolutely. And in Killing of a Sacred Deer, she is restrained to the point of just crumbling, but she never does. She never, I mean, she's not restrained and aching to that point. Her silence is as loud as any dialogue in the film. These heartbreaking stares during certain scenes of the film, the way she lies across the bed, almost just waiting for it to happen.
Oh yeah, hashtag corpse sex game.
Hashtag corpse sex game. I mean, but these scenes. I mean, I just thought her performance was absolutely brilliant. It was hard for me to pick actually who was first and second between my two performers this year. I had to give my top performer that category. You know, in that category, I had to put her in that place. But she's amazing.
I feel bad that I didn't squeeze Nicole Kidman in. She's an actress that's not afraid to take risks and to be in a lot of weird-ass movies.
Birth?
Yes! Okay, I do not like the movie Birth, but I'm impressed that she did that movie. Or like Dogville. She's done a lot of things.
Things that for a mainstream actress might be considered like, or looked at as, oh, she's going to career suicide. She's going to take all the weird roles and, you know.
And I agree. I don't know if it was her marriage to Tom Cruise in particular, but maybe just because she's so beautiful, mm-hmm. like a lot of dumb dudes in Hollywood, I kind of underestimated like her raw talent.
Yeah.
She's amazing, and she's probably squeezes the most emotion and torment into that role out of any actor in Killing of a Sacred Deer. And that whole cast is
the
top
cast
notch.
Is phenomenal. I mean, Lanthimos and Colin Farrell are like, you know, Jack Lemmon and what was it the from The Apartment, you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, any of the great, you know, right actor director duos of, you know, of cinema,
mm-hmm.
they are carving out their own little niche right now.
And what a great year for Colin Farrell, or maybe not year, but past few years.
Oh yeah. He's been, he's really had a renewal as far as his, because, you know, again, in the beginning, he really was this sort of, like, good-looking Irish.
Yeah, another person I'm just like, oh, you're just, like, an attractive dude.
Just a rogue. He was partying all the time. He was getting, you know, arrested and all that, you know, living the Hollywood life. And then he really starts to sink his teeth into meaningful roles, not in, like, SWAT, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is what you get. You get his best performances. So sometimes it takes a director, I think, to coax that out of certain actors, and Lanthimos has been very successful in doing that.
Well, I guess I'll go with best actress first, because weirdly I have more to say about my honorable mention, but it's Garance Marillier as Justine in Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Her character goes to vet school as this like virginal, doe-eyed vegetarian, and she goes through this identity crisis. It's also like one of the more bizarre coming-of-age stories.
Yes, it is.
And I think this actress is so good at like starting off as this kind of sweet, waif-like girl, and when she's like biting into something, you totally see that shift. She's got a lot of range.
Mm-hmm. She was fantastic in one of my favorite horror films of the year. Yeah, absolutely. So, my top... Should I go?
Yeah,
top pick?
Yeah,
okay.
Go.
I... You know, I... My top two picks in Best Actress category are both seasoned actresses, but I couldn't help but putting them in there.
Oh, no. You know? I wonder if your top pick is my runner-up. Go ahead.
Probably Carla Gugino.
Yes, that's totally my runner-up.
I mean, how could it not be? It's one of those, like, it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that to reduce her performance at all. It's just a no-brainer, and she's going to be one of the best performances of the year, female or male. Gutsy, poignant, powerful. What was called an unfilmable Stephen King book becomes an incredibly entertaining and frightening and scary mm-hmm. and heartbreaking film directed by, I think, well directed by Mike Flanagan, who did the screenplay as well, wrote and directed it, mm-hmm. Who did one of my favorites from last year, Hush.
Yes.
Both of our favorites. Yeah. And he is going to be doing, not sure how I feel about this, but he's going to be doing the remake of I Know What You Did Last Summer. If anyone can do it, I give him, I think I give him a thumbs up.
Well, if he wants to go for some of the more melodramatic, like YA fiction of Lois Duncan over the 90s slasher vibes, I'd be interested to see that.
I want to see it. He's also doing that TV show, The House on the Haunted Hill.
I did hear about that.
Which is
going
to be fun. Mm-hmm. So a little digression there. But he brings out this performance in her. Gugino's always been an intriguing actress to me. She plays a pretty tough character. She's never been a star. She's always been a really good working actress. This is a star role for her, I think. Mm-hmm. This is her moment here. I mean, she starred in The Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore. This is one of her first films, one of her first breakout roles. But then she had a recurring role in Californication. She was the lead character in Karen Sisko, the short-lived Karen Sisko show.
Sorry, just going back to Son-in-Law, I was just thinking how her love interests have not improved at all between that and Gerald's Game.
No, terrible decision-making. I mean, Karen Sisko and, adapted from Out of Sight, not a good choice there either. But I think that this is not only one of the best King adaptations I've seen of a King book, it's one of the best horror films of the year, and the screenplay, the film in general, just allow her to kind of breathe in this role. Bruce Greenwood is really frightening as her fairly misogynistic, brash husband, and that's a great counterpart to her. She relives these powerful, scarring memories of her youth, demons, physical and emotional. She does it all. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Career-making role for Carla Gugino.
Yeah, completely agree. She was my honorable mention, but she might as well have been tied for just best
actress. It's a thin line, right, between the top two for me.
She just gives that role her all. I mean, she throws everything in there, and she's in like 99% of the movie almost entirely handcuffed to that goddamn bed.
Right. To be able to pull that off is nothing short of miraculous to me.
I think I mentioned before that Gerald's Game is one of, like, maybe five or six Stephen King books that I've actually read. It's not a great book. I liked it, but it's not really a good book. And I'm also amazed that it's a good movie adaptation. And total props, like you said, to Mike Flanagan for his direction. But I think that premise could have really fallen flat and been too much of a gimmick without Carla Gugino's acting. It's superb. She's incredible.
No one thought it could be filmed. And she and Flanagan, because you really have to put the two of them together, they do it. Mm-hmm. Ace. Total ace. So, best director is going... There are going to be some common threads here, I think, with both of us. Because my best director and best picture from the same film...
Yep, so are mine.
And I definitely want to start with honorable mention. Do you want to start first?
Sure. Mine are super repetitive. So my best director and best picture are exactly the same, pretty much.
Yep.
My best director is Jordan Peele for Get Out.
Yep.
I remember when that was first announced, I didn't understand that it was going to be... that he was actually a horror fan and that it was going to be a horror movie and that it was going to be... that it was going to be a commentary on, like, race and privilege and that feeling of being helpless and gaslit. The Sunken Place is such a perfect concept mm-hmm. that really works today. And yeah, he totally did a horror movie. I don't know why. I thought he was going to try to do something... I think a lot of people thought he was going to try to do something funny. And there are some funny moments in Get Out, but it's ridiculous that anyone would categorize it as a comedy movie, and it's insulting.
Unlike The Last Jedi... Sorry, I just have to go on this for a second. That had some of the worst comedic moments in any film I've ever seen that shouldn't be there.
Disagree. For the record, I loved The Last Jedi.
Awful comedic moments that normally in Star Wars movies weren't that bad. Jordan Peele gets it perfect. I mean, he hits the nail on the head. Every moment of comedic relief is needed. You need it at that point. You've gone through some really harrowing moments prior to that, and every time it just hits on point. I wish Jordan Peele had directed The Last Jedi. I'm just going to say that right now. Anyway, everything means something. Nothing is throwaway or incidental. And the cohesion of the film is almost unparalleled. So from a director's standpoint, yeah, it's really... I couldn't pick anyone else other than Jordan Peele for my top director this year.
I'm so excited about his Monkey Paw productions and making more movies that feature minorities.
Well, he's a Twilight Zone fan. This is an extended Twilight Zone episode and one of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's got a lot of influences. Like, mm-hmm. It feels, you know, a little Stepford Wives mm-hmm. and...
There's Stepford Wives, too.
A little Rosemary's Baby. It's got a couple things in there.
I can't believe I took so long to see it, but we did an episode earlier this year where we talked about Get Out and just lauded praise upon it, and you can't really heap enough praise. My honorable mention is Osgood Perkins for The Black Coat's Daughter.
Interesting.
Because it's one of the most unsettling and frightening films of the year for me. I don't jump at a lot of horror. Not a lot of horror gets me. That doesn't mean I don't love it or I'm not scared. It's just it doesn't show my reactions. I jumped multiple times during Black Coat's Daughter. I think there are times where this simmering suspense is almost too much to take. You almost can't take anymore, and then it just destroys you.
Yeah.
There are a couple scenes that just dread. Absolutely destroy you. It's soft. It's slow. It's beautiful. It's dark. It's muted. It's colorful. Yeah, I think as I talked about earlier, I thought the score was fantastic and blended really well with the film. Obviously, you've got family, you know, working together, so there's some, you know, I'm sure they worked for a long time on this. The visuals are great. It's a strange little film, and it grew on me as I thought about it. I watched it about a month and a half ago, and it just is growing and growing my appreciation for it. So that's my honorable mention for director.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I watched that towards the beginning of 2017, or whenever it came out. I think I watched it quite a while ago, and I talked about it very briefly on a recently watched. But I think Osgood Perkins has a very specific vision, the way he does his films. I didn't enjoy I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives Inside the House quite as much,
mm-hmm.
but I think that kind of eeriness that he's putting forward and the way he features, like, women is really interesting. So mm-hmm. I like the way he's doing things. My runner-up was Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water, one of my favorite movies of the year. I think this is the best Guillermo del Toro movie. I love it even more than Pan's Labyrinth. I think it's so good. I can't wait for you to see it, Carrie. God damn it.
I know. It's one of my great disappointments that I haven't seen it this year. All right. Have we arrived at the moment?
Best picture. I feel like I should change my runner-up. It probably would have been The Shape of Water, but it's hard. It was really a toss-up between a few, so...
This is a very, very tough call.
My best picture was Get Out, though.
It couldn't have been. Okay, justice for me, Carla Gugino and James McAvoy had to win those categories. I couldn't pick anyone other than Jordan Peele and Get Out for director and picture. There was just no other option. Get Out is just one of the great horror films of all time. It may go down as one. It's very possible.
Yeah, it expands the genre, but beyond that, it's also something where you're invested the minute it starts until it's over.
Yep.
There's not a minute to cut out of it.
No, there's not. Everything, as I said before, everything means something. We've talked about that before. You know, it's interesting for anyone who has never been in a position where they felt like they were a minority. That movie shows you what it feels like. It gives you a mm-hmm. glimpse into what it feels like to someone else's worldview. And, you know, being a white male, it was very interesting for me to watch that through my own lens and trying to understand how someone of color may feel in that situation. And then, of course, it ratchets it to scary, frightening Twilight Zone-ish heights. But it's based in a very honest and raw idea.
I wish I could remember that actor's name who, like, plays the son. He went on to be in, like, Twin Peaks, and then he was in Three Billboards, and I'm just like, damn.
That kid is frightening.
I know. He terrified the hell out of me between Get Out and Twin Peaks, and then in Three Billboards, because those roles had such a horrible, like, piercing impression on me. It took me a while to adjust to him as a sympathetic character.
Yes.
And he's a really good actor, but...
Well, and even his brief moments in Florida Project are great. Yeah, Caleb Landry Jones is that kid's name. But yeah, from top down, I mean, Jordan Peele gets these great performances from Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford.
Oh my God.
Daniel Kaluuya is a fantastic performance from him as Chris. You've got all these just juicy, weird roles. Betty Gabriel as Georgina is scary and frightening and just...
And heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. Lakeith Stanfield gives one of the more bizarre performances of the year.
Catherine Keener Andre King. Creepy hypno mom.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Stanfield, if you remember, is the one who's wearing the hat. Looks like he just walked out of, 1864 or something like that. And he's wearing this hat, on his head. And he is the first evidence we see of sort of the broken, these broken characters in this town. Oof, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm. And his, I don't know. Yeah, it's so sad, though, with those characters.
It's very sad. No, the movie is heartbreaking in a lot of ways. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what more I can say about it. It's, but it is absolutely phenomenal. What was your runner-up?
Yeah, well, it's Killing of a Sacred Deer, I've just decided. So pretty much for me, Get Out was the best movie of the year. And then I really loved Killing of a Sacred Deer, and I really loved The Shape of Water. Those were like my three favorite movies, I guess. But I guess I'm going to go with Killing of a Sacred Deer for Best Picture, just because I think Lanthimos's movies are so wholly unique and... like nothing I've experienced, even though they kind of have their own mood that you get into at between this and The Lobster and Dogtooth. But yeah, I had one of my best theater experiences watching it. I laughed so much and then I cringed. I went through like the range of intense emotions. I would say it is a comedy of the darkest variety, but it has some scenes that like rival the most intense in horror movies, like I was saying, like with Raw and stuff. It's the reason I'm excited to go see movies. I just loved it.
So this is a very hard one for me. I mean, I have two that could easily be my honorable mention that I was kind of looking at my top five for the year, and I was kind of pulling from that top five. It could go with either one, but I know this is probably a weird pick. I'm going to go with Gerald's Game, and it's really because of Carla Gugino. That movie,
that is a worthy pick.
I have to go with that. It's just phenomenal. Because I would, Get Out can only get one pick, so. but yeah, Gerald's Game, my very close, almost no boundary third would have been Raw, actually.
Yeah.
Which I thought was...
And Mother would be up there for me, too.
It felt fresh. It felt, a new take on the cannibal genre in a way. Shocking. Things you don't see coming. Very well done. So I got to give up to Miss DeCorno. Is that how you pronounce her last name?
Julia DeCorno? I don't know how to say it either.
I think that's it. Anyway, she would get like a third honorable mention for me. One thing I do want to say, my best... non-horror film of the year that feels like it should be a horror film is Thelma.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Thelma is haunting, and I went into it not hearing that it has some suspense and sort of thriller aspects to it. It's, actually watching Killing of a Sacred Deer makes me think that Thelma is almost as horror as Killing a Sacred Deer is horror. It's about a young woman who is coming of age, and she starts to realize that the massive and increasingly frequent seizures that she's having are due to some supernatural ability that she possesses. Meanwhile, she's also having a burgeoning love affair with another woman, which for her is her first lesbian experience, or the first pangs of love. Oh, there's the cat. Mm. And so we do have a special guest star with us today.
Yeah, Agent Cooper.
Yeah, Agent Cooper. He's just, he's trying to help us. I'm trying to help out a little bit, add some fun to the mix. So yeah, Thelma, Eli Harbo, the lead actress, had I been able to call this a horror film, she would have been my honorable mention for best actress, possibly maybe even beating out Nicole Kidman, because she is phenomenal in this movie. It's so understated, I almost want it to be a little more, I wanted to see a little more visually. But Thelma is a really interesting one. So sorry, I know it's a little digression from what we're doing, but I want to mention that film because I also, Steph, think you really should see it too.
Yeah.
It's categorized as drama, fantasy, mystery. So it's right on the edge of being a horror film, if not. And you may, I'll be interested to hear what you're...
It sounds like something I'd really enjoy.
Joachim Trier is the director, and he is sort of like the wunderkind in Norway right now.
Well, just to go back to your runner-up and right back to Gerald's Game, I do want to say I think that's a great pick, and it's my favorite Stephen King adaptation of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And Stephen King's had some good ones this year.
Best year ever for Stephen King adaptations. So what were your... So tell me this. Do you have a top five for the year?
I do have a top five, not specifically horror. I'd say just off the top of my head, just thinking just of horror movies. Horror, yeah. I'd say... Get Out, Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Shape of Water, Mother and Raw.
Okay. So yeah, mine would have been Get Out, Raw, Gerald's Game, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and Blackcoat's Daughter. Those would have been my five. Creep 2 was right below that. 1922, right below that. I thought that was a great film.
Yeah,
and
it's
better
awesome.
As again, one of those films that as you sit there and you dissect it, it gets better and better as I think about it. One of my most... my pick for fun horror film of the year, just like silly fun, is a toss-up between Babysitter and Happy Death Day. Because Happy Death Day is a lot of fun.
I was actually trying to see how I could work Happy Death Day
in here.
I
couldn't do it.
I mean, that actress also did a great job. I feel awful that I don't know her name. She's in almost every single moment of that movie as well, and
yep.
She really delivers.
She starts out being fairly unlikable, and by the end, you're just rooting for her. I mean, you're always rooting for her, but you understand that she's prickly. She's a prickly character,
mm-hmm.
And she's hard to really feel a lot of emotion for.
She has her defenses up.
She does, and as the movie goes on, you're rewarded with watching her kind of develop as a character. Yeah, so that was a fun one. We have Jessica Roth.
Jessica Roth.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
So yeah, she was great. So yeah, that's 2017. I mean, still a good year for horror. I think, again, we talked about before, horror is just becoming even more prevalent. Companies like Blumhouse and A24 are putting out really fantastic and supporting great directors and great talent. And I think that horror is going through... particularly, again, last 3-4 years going through a true renaissance.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to say, I'm someone who really likes mainstream horror, too. I think lots of the Blumhouse stuff is awesome, even if it's not, you know, Get Out, like all the other stuff.
Sure. I mean, Annabelle Creation.
Yeah.
We enjoyed that, you know. Sure, there were some other fun films this year.
Put a nun in a horror movie, and I will be there to watch it.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. So, Super Dark Times, I guess, would be down there on my list, but probably my top 10.
That was the last...
Some notable ones.
Horror. You know, that's another one I'm not sure if I would totally classify it as horror.
It's right on the edge. It's classified as horror in some places, if you... Like, a lot of best of the year lists, in fact, mm-hmm. horror lists listed in there. But yeah, it's questionable.
I've actually waited to look at... best of the year horror list until after we recorded this, but I can see why Super Dark Times would be on there. I do want to say about Super Dark Times really fast, those boys, it's set, I don't know quite when in the 90s, but I think the mid-90s.
I think it's 93 or 94 is my guess.
Oh, early 90s? Okay, well, I was thinking it was the mid-90s.
It could be.
And it's upstate New York, and I was also a young teen in the mid-90s in upstate New York, and now as a person in my 30s, I have the same maturity level as this kid making steak jerk-off jokes, and I'm just like, oh my god, that changed it all.
It's a beautiful thing. Never change stuff. Hashtag never change. Yeah. One other one I thought was very interesting but didn't quite make it is A Dark Song. I thought that was a really haunting journey towards what ended up to me to be a relatively unsatisfying climax is why I couldn't put it in any major categories.
I also didn't love the ending, the reveal mm-hmm. there, but, you know, yeah, I liked A Dark Song a lot, too. I really like that actor and actress. They're good. And that actor, the guy who plays kind of the occultist that
the
she
warlock.
Calls in.
Yeah, right? Straight up warlock, y'all.
He stars as the father in The End of the Fucking World, which
really
could only loosely maybe be horror. I mean, that's definitely, it has horror elements. It had a scene that made me scream out loud and accidentally punched my husband in rage.
Nice.
He wasn't doing anything. He just happened to be next to me.
So if I see Dean in a cast this week, then I know what happened. Okay, good, good.
But I would recommend that too. It's been a good year for horror TV. I did not watch The Mist yet, but I enjoyed The Exorcist. I enjoyed Twin Peaks so much.
Exorcist was fun. Twin Peaks was fun.
And Stranger Things season 2. I literally said over Thanksgiving, this is something I'm thankful that exists. I miss Twin Peaks, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was a great year for horror TV. I think is also getting better and better. We mentioned earlier Mike Flanagan's House on Haunted Hill. I'm really excited about it. Very excited about The Terror.
I haven't heard of that.
So that's a ship, I think it's in the 1800s, exploring near the North Pole, I believe. And it's a brutal journey that actually has been documented. I think there was a book written about it, multiple books written about it. And the members of the crew keep disappearing. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be just really, you know, it's an icy horror movie. So,
well, I like ghost ships that aren't ghost ship.
I know. So that looks great. I think AMC is putting that out, and they usually hit a home run with most of their stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of good things coming, and we're going to discuss some of that in our next episode.
Oh yeah,
that's going to be our things that we're excited about coming soon for 2018, because there is a lot of stuff on the docket for 2018.
Yeah, we'll talk about 2018 stuff next mm-hmm. time. But
we're still sad that there was never a Friday 13th this year.
I know.
Remember that? I was listening back to our last episode. I was like, oh, yep, no, no Friday the 13th. So, oh well. But in the meantime, there's plenty of other franchises that we'll be having or will be putting out some further installments this year. So there's a lot to look forward to. We really thank y'all for joining us for the 2018 horror Oscars for our 2017 horror films. You know, we did our whole red carpet treatment. It's been a wild weekend, partying, hanging with celebrities. Mm-hmm. And we're glad we could be here this morning.
Here we are in our tuxedos, signing off.
That's right.
All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.